on the floor. Now my jewelry box froze. Fuck up bowl, fuck up stove. Counted millions in a cold. Bad bitch, booted swole. Got her on bankroll. Can't fold. Just a no. Headshot, case closed.
What is up, guys? It's Andy Frisella, and this is the show for the realists. Say goodbye to the lies, the fakeness, and delusions of modern society. And welcome to motherfucking reality, guys. Today we have midweek Q and AF. This is where you submit the questions, and we give you the answers. Now, you could submit your questions, be featured on Q and AF episodes a couple different ways. The first way is,
guys, you can email those questions in to askandy@andyfrisella.com.
Or you can go on YouTube in the Q&AF episodes, and you can drop your question right there in the comments, and we'll pick some from there as well. Now, other times, you're going to have CTI. Now, CTI is where we talk about cruising the internet. This is where we put up topics on the screen. We talk about what we think is true, what we think is not true. We speculate. We connect dots. We make jokes. And then we talk about how we, the people, can solve these problems going on in the world created by these turds. Then we have real talk. Real talk is just 5 to 20 minutes of me giving you some real talk. And then we have 75 hard verses. 75 hard verses is where people who have completed the 75 hard program, which is the initial phase of the Live Hard program, that you can get for free at episode 208 on the audio feed. Come on the show. They talk about how their life was before, how their life is after, and how you could change your life using this program. All right, if you're unfamiliar with Live Hard and 75 Hard, it is the world's most popular mental transformation program in history, okay? It has transformed millions of people's lives. You can get it for free at episode 208. If you want to know the nuts and bolts, the ins and outs, and you get a whole bunch of extra value on top of that, there's a book available on my website at andyfrisella.com called The Book on Mental Toughness. Now, you don't have to buy the book, but it is a good book, and we sell it out every single time we get in stock. So if you're lucky enough to get one of those, go grab one of those if you're one of the people that wants to know the ins and outs of everything in regards to the program. Has the entire Live Hard program, plus 10 chapters on mental toughness, plus case studies on real people that you recognize on how they use mental toughness to create the lives that have made them who they are. All right. And those 10 chapters are extremely valuable on top of the Live Hard program as well. So you don't have to buy it if you can't afford it. If it's not something that you think you need, you absolutely don't need to go spend the money on it. You can just go listen to the podcast episode for free. So that's episode 208 on the audio feed only. We weren't on YouTube whenever that came out. We just started YouTube about a year ago. So that's the rundown on the show. Now, you're going to notice something different about our show. We don't run ads on the show. I don't talk about things that I don't use and get paid money to do so. In exchange, I ask very simply, and the reason I don't do that, by the way, is I don't want to answer to those people. We try to keep it real on the show. We try to talk about things that are going on in a very real, authentic way. And sponsors don't like that. They like to tell you what to say and how to say it, and I'm not that kind of guy, so I don't do that. And in exchange for that, I just ask very simply, support what I got going on, which you guys do, and I'm very thankful for, and then share the show. All right. If the message is good, if it makes you think, if it makes you laugh, it gives you a new perspective, if it's something that you think people need to hear, please share the show. Get behind it. We get censored. We get shadow banned. We get messed with. Almost every single CTI episode that we put out gets hammered. So we need you guys to get the message out. So don't be a hoe.
Share the show.
All right. What's up, man?
You know, I was sitting here. I was thinking. I started looking around at your guys' everybody's lips. Do you guys use chapstick?
Who is we guys?
Well, you know, like
y'all.
Yeah.
You people. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Do we people?
Yeah. I've never seen you use chapstick.
Well,
but like you look like they look fine.
I don't know if I fall into the you people. Well, I'm like a hybrid.
That's true.
But not, yeah, I'm like a hybrid, bro.
I was literally just sitting here thinking, like, in 28 years of my life, I don't think I've ever seen.
Yeah, we only like the cherry, man. Yeah, so like we don't fuck with nothing else. We get the cherry, or we get the Burt's Bees.
Yeah,
and you know,
I've never seen it.
Yeah, we got special moves for that. There's a lot of things you never see.
Yeah, what else? What else?
We're just all kinds of like little, you know,
little boxes.
I mean, read the internet, man. You know, white people are the devil. You know, we do all the tricks behind closed doors, and we got all these secret rituals, and they're all revolving around with chapstick.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what it got.
So if you want to get rid of the white people, get rid of the cherry chapstick and the Burt's Bees.
All right, I had enough up to here with it.
Yeah.
You're going to take my damn cherry chapstick? That's how you start a revolution, apparently. No, man, what's going on? Dude, I almost got another dog today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're one of those impulsive pet owners.
Yeah.
You're like a guy, like, if Alex brings home something, you're keeping it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But
so what kind of dog?
A Malinois.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, and dude, she's beautiful, man.
A puppy?
Yeah, 2 years old.
2 years?
Yeah.
Is that a dog of one of our friends?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great dog.
And
is it trained?
I mean, she's got the obedience down. Yeah. But there was some prior home issues, so she's not really... They don't really want to tackle
Andy. Andy sent me a picture of my man.
Of Cobus?
Yeah, he's got a little gray on his face
now.
He's
getting old, man.
Yeah.
He's like 7-8 years old.
No, he can't be that old.
Yeah. No, Cobus is old.
I think he's like 5. We'll find out. Text and find out.
Right now.
Yeah. I say 5. So did you get it?
No, because I kept thinking about what you said the other day. About the dog years to human, like, bro.
Listen, man, people discount dogs, but, like, here's the thing. Like, dogs are very special creatures.
Yeah.
And you got to think of it, man. When you get a dog, you got to take care of it, dude. You're that dog doesn't have a career. It doesn't have friends. You're its only thing, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, like,
I mean, it's just
when you think about it like that, it's important to really, like,
Every day,
you spend some time with your dog.
I mean,
man.
The only reason I was thinking about it though, because like my girl Nikki, she's getting a lot older.
Yeah,
you know, and I know there's going to be a transition, and I would rather just have.
Yeah,
not I don't want to say call it the replacement, right? Yeah. But like I'd rather fill that void before.
Well,
it's actually a void.
Also, there's something to be said for that because the young dog will pick up how the old dog kind of
exactly
the rules, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I get that. How old is Nikki now?
Shit, she'll be 14 years old this
Holy
year.
Shit, dude, really? 14. Dude, remember that time she jumped out the window of your apartment?
That's what I'm saying. She done seen him, a few things, man.
Bro, like 5 years ago, dude, she jumped out DJ's window.
Second floor loft.
Yeah, downtown, onto the street.
Onto fucking Washington Avenue.
Yeah.
Yeah, and made it, like no broken bones or nothing, man.
She had a scraped up face or something, right?
Yeah, she scraped her face and messed up her snout, muzzle, whatever. But yeah, man, like, I mean, she's
snooter.
Her snooter,
she messed up the snooter, huh?
Messed up the snooter, man. But she's been good, man. You know, she's good. But I just know she's getting old, you know? Yeah. Like she, you know those old.
That's a
dogs.
Long time for a Malinois.
Malinois, I mean, they're typically pretty healthy. They got a good lifespan on them, man, because they don't have all the other issues that, like, you know, let's say a German Shepherd would have with, like, hip dysplasia and shit like that. So, like, I could see her, like, she's like, you know, she'll look at the stairs and she takes like fucking 3 seconds before she hits them. You know what I'm saying?
It's going to be some work.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, I see it, man. I just, you know, I don't know. But I almost got this damn dog, man. It's going to be free of charge, too, because she's a foster. See, they're looking for a home. So, but yeah, man, that's all I got, man. What's been
going on? So when's she moving in?
That's what I'm
doing. I already know.
I got to get
you better make some room.
Yeah, well, that's the problem right now. So she might have to go. She told me to pick.
That ain't gonna work, bro. You're gonna get killed when you get home tomorrow.
Yeah, man. Well, it is what it is, man. I got some good ones for you.
All right, good. Let's dive into it.
Guys, Andy, question number one. Andy, what sort of advice can you give to someone that has a tough time regaining confidence after a major loss? How do you rebuild that confidence after a major loss? How do you do it?
You got to manufacture it, okay? Confidence and momentum are not these abstract, random things that come into our life, all right? A lot of people think of it like that way, and I thought that way too. I grew up most of my life thinking that, like, catching momentum was something that just sort of happened. Like, I had these times in my life where I would go and things seemed real easy and I got in the zone and shit just worked, all right? And then most of the time it didn't work. And so I would get super frustrated all the time because I couldn't figure out why was this so easy for me at this point in time and so difficult all the other times? And then also the same with confidence. I'd spent most of my life looking at everybody else who was a confident person wondering and actually being pretty bitter about it, to be honest. Like, why are they always so confident? Like, how does this person have this? Like, and I think most people think of those two things in that regard. They look around and it's kind of confusing, right? They look at people who are confident and they say, why is that person so confident? Why is it so easy for that person? Why do they act and behave that way while I'm sitting here filled with all this anxiety that if I do something, I'm going to get made fun of, or I'm going to get laughed at, or I'm going to get, you know, trolled or whatever, man. And I think most people live that way. Most people let that fear and that misunderstanding keep them from ever becoming who it is they want to become. They have this image in their mind of who they are, but they're afraid to show it to the world because they're afraid of all those things I just said. You know, you're going to get laughed at. You're going to get made fun of. You're going to get told that you're stupid. You're going to get, you know, you're going to become the joke of the town. And guess what? You are. The first time you step out to be that person of who you're supposed to be in your heart that you already know that you're afraid to even tell anybody about because you're afraid they're going to laugh, that's who the fuck you were supposed to be in your life. You were supposed to be that. It was imprinted on you at birth. It is a divine purpose that you are supposed to serve by becoming that version of yourself. And most people are too afraid because they aren't in the light about how we create these things and what we do to build them. And so when it comes to confidence and it comes to momentum, when you don't have it, you have to manufacture it. And that starts through force. That's one day at a time. This is what the Live Hard program is all about, all right? One day at a time. You're going to say, I'm going to do this, 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 I'm going to do this. And you do those things. And then they're very hard. And you wake up the next day and you say, fuck, I'm still in this shitty situation. I don't have any confidence. I don't feel good. But I did do what I was supposed to do yesterday. And that's where it starts. It starts this little bitty win that is seemingly insignificant. And then you go around the second day and you say, I'm going to do this. 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 And you do those things. And then you wake up on the third day and you're like, fuck, I'm still not where I want to be. But the last 2 days, I did what I was supposed to do. And then you wake up on the third day, and then you wake up on the fourth day. And soon after, you know, when you're 20, 30 days in, you're looking back, you're like, well, shit, I did this for the last 30 days. I can do this. And you start to feel good about yourself. You start to say, dude, I'm pretty badass motherfucker. I'm someone that can do things. All those things I thought were impossible, now I'm able to do them. And that progresses the longer that you do it. And all the while, you're manufacturing all this momentum. So you're doing these things day in and day out and day in and day out. And what happens is they start to become part of your life. They start to become part of who you are. And as you continue down the path, the momentum picks up more and more and more and more. And eventually those things that on the first day were so fucking hard for you are now just part of who you are. And not only are they part of who you are, you feel great about who you're becoming. And because who you're becoming is a completely different version of yourself that you couldn't even imagine on the first day. All right. This is the reality of how winners operate. Winners understand very simply the confidence and momentum. When we don't have them, we got to go back to the basics and start at zero. And we got to start grinding it out day by day by day by day by day. And we understand that after a certain amount of days, we'll have momentum and we'll have confidence. And we know it so well that we don't doubt it. So when we do find ourselves in these places without momentum, and we do find ourselves in these places without confidence, which happens to the highest level people, they know what to do. And the not knowing what to do is what makes people hopeless. What if you knew what to do every single time you felt like you didn't have confidence, you didn't have momentum, things weren't going your way, you knew exactly what to do to fix it? Would it be such an anxious, desperate, hopeless feeling? No, because you know what to do to get yourself out of it. And this is the basis of the entire Live Hard program. It's about building momentum. It's about building confidence. It's about building belief. It's about building discipline and fortitude, these perishable skills that all go together to encompass the idea of mental toughness that allow you to progress to where you're trying to be. But you have to be willing to take that first step. You have to be willing to take that second step. And you have to have faith that if you do the work, the result will come. And this is why I always say, work comes before the belief. You don't believe first and then do the work. That's not how the fuck it works. You have to say, I'm going to do the work regardless of what it produces. I'm just going to do the work. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do the work today. And if it doesn't produce anything today, I'm going to get up. I'm going to do it again tomorrow. And what happens is over the course of time, you start to believe because you're understanding, you're seeing a little bit of result. You're seeing a little bit of win. You're seeing a little bit of progress happening. And you're starting to realize, oh shit, this is how the fuck it works. And once you go through this process a few times, you start to have solutions for the times when you're desperate, when you're hopeless, when you're down. You start to understand what it's going to take to pull yourself out. This is why the Live Hard program is a every year program. Okay, there's not a single fucking program on the planet that you can do once that's going to maintain results forever. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, what do you do after 75 days? Well, if you knew the whole fucking program, you'd understand that it's not 75 days. It's actually a year. And the Live Hard program, like it clearly defines in every single fucking thing I've ever written about it, is meant to be repeated year after year after year after year. It is a true, sustainable lifestyle. And that's what it's going to take. Because after you get rid of the 75 days and you've accomplished and you've won and you go 30 days without that structure, if you so choose to, you're going to start to, guess what? Lose a little bit of confidence. You're going to start to go backwards a little bit physically. You're going to start to get a little softer and you're going to be aware of it. And so then what happens? Oh, phase one comes in and it tunes you up. Okay. And then you go back. And eventually after doing this for a year or two in a row, what ends up happening is you just start to live that way 99% of the time and it becomes your life. And that is what creates the true sustainability of someone who's wanting to be a high performer. So we have to fucking understand confidence, momentum. These are things we are in control of. These are not magical. They are not gifts from the universe. These are things that are within our control. And when we refuse to control the things that we can control, which is what we put in our mouth, the exercise we do, the input we put in our brain, the way we treat other people, all of these things, there's a million other things we're in control of. When we don't control those things, we're going to have chaos. We're going to have hopelessness. We're going to have despair. We're going to have depression. We're going to have anxiety. But when you control as many of those things as possible, it's very easy to look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, man, today didn't go my way, but fuck, I did everything I was supposed to do. Okay. And that protects you from getting beat down by life as it comes. That's why it's called mental toughness. So when we think about, you know, things like confidence, momentum, and what's different between you and the highest achieving people that you may look up to, it's usually the fact that they understand that they can create these things on demand when needed. Yeah. And it's done by doing what you can.
Yeah. Let me ask you this on the same point, because I feel like that it's something that, you know, I don't know if this is a young person's issue or not, but it's like just being able to deal with a loss, right? Like, and somebody who absolutely hates fucking losing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, is it something that's off the table? Like, I mean, we got to be real about a loss. It can still happen, right?
You're going to lose a lot.
Right? And so, like, getting off of that, okay, like, yeah, it was a fucking loss. Like, get back in it.
Dude, listen. The reason people fucking have a problem with losing is because they cannot comprehend the value that there is in losing. There is far more value in losing than there is in winning, even if you hate it. I fucking hate losing, but I value the fuck out of it, okay? I have started to create a situation in my life a long time ago where when I started to recognize the value in losing, where when I take hits, when I have losses, which happen to me literally every fucking day of my life, very rarely do things go the way I want them to go. There's this myth around people who have built things that they just like wave their magic wand and it's much easier for them. That's not true. They're actually just much better at solving the shit faster. And one of the ways you get faster with executing on a plan is by not dwelling when you have the losses and instead recognizing that the loss delivers you a tremendous lesson. What's that lesson worth? What is the tool? What is the skill that you are gaining from that lesson? And if you can learn that right away, okay, you don't have to dwell. You don't have to beat yourself up. You don't have to be in this position of hopelessness and despair and confusion and frustration. You could say, well, that sucks, but I learned this and I won't do that again, which makes me a more formidable operator, a more formidable opponent, and I get to move forward from here with this new skill set. So you can actually transition the framework to, I am grateful for my losses because what they teach you. And every single fucking champion that has ever won on the face of the fucking planet does this when they lose. Losing happens way more frequently than winning. It is not a 90-10 ratio of winning to losing. It's actually the opposite. So for every win you have fucking 9 losses. That's the reality of the game. And it's a misunderstanding of how the game operates that gets people in trouble. They assume that because people win, they must win all the time. No, it's not that they win all the time. It's that they're okay with all the losses they have and they're able to dissect the lessons away from those things and convert them into skills and then use them moving forward that makes them formidable and effective moving forward. So reframe the losses from, oh shit, dude, I fucking lost. I lost, blah, blah, blah. No. Yes, that didn't go the way I wanted to, but I learned this and this, and yeah, it cost me this. So that was actually worth it. Because now when I move forward 10, 20, 30 years from now, I'm going to know not to do that. And if I did that in that situation, it would cost me 10, 20, 30 times as much money or time or effort or frustration, or it could be this much more devastating. So if we reframe how we look at the losses and start to value them, then we don't spend time dwelling on them. And that time that's spent dwelling by most people is spent moving forward.
I fucking love it, man. Love it. Guys, let's get into question number two. In 2022, I completed 75 hard. And at the time, I was freshly 30, had no idea what I was wasting my life on, and I needed a jolt. By the end of it, I decided that I wanted to start my own floral business. In 2023, I launched my business with a goal of 2 weddings that summer. I did 13. This year, it's March, and I've already booked more weddings, but each one is 2 to 4 times bigger than last year's average. So with that, I have bought out my old work, a flower shop my old boss was selling, and it's such a cool full circle thing to take over something that's been around for 43 years. Getting to my question, I am so fucking new to business. It's definitely an ignorance on fire kind of growth right now. But I know that's not sustainable. In 2 years, I went from managing a well-known flower shop to launching my own business of just me, myself, and I. And now owning that old flower shop that comes with 6 employees and both a mountain of responsibilities and incredible opportunities. It's been around for 43 years, well-established, and I have big shoes to fill. How do I overcome this nagging fear in the back of my head that this will all crash and burn in my hands? My years in this industry qualify me in the sense of producing beautiful pieces and experiences for our customers. And my years of managing and leading our team will, of course, help me in that sense. But it's a whole nother game when you're the actual owner of all of this. How do you battle that? How do you deal with that?
Well, look, there's a lot in that question. First of all, congratulations on moving forward. Most people won't move forward even if they know that's what they want to do. I think that's amazing. Secondly, the ignorance on fire feeling that you, that's called entrepreneurship, all right? And that stays with you forever.
Yeah.
Okay. There's not a day that I walk in here and after been doing this for 25 years, first form's 15 years old. I've been in the same industry for 25. There's not a day that I walk in here, a single day, where I don't feel that way. So you have to understand, if you're an effective entrepreneur, that means you understand that you don't really know the answer, but you're willing to do whatever it takes to find the answer and figure it out. So you have to come to terms with that. I would say the fact that you're aware of what you don't know what to do is actually a huge advantage over people that think they have it figured out. Because when people think they have it figured out and people pretend like they have it figured out, there's no capacity to get any better because they think they know everything. This is the true value of humility whenever you're an operator, all right? If you know that you're not supposed to be there, right? But you are, by the way. But if you think you're not, is that necessarily a feeling that you want to overcome if it actually helps you find better solutions because you're understanding where you are as opposed to thinking you're better than you are and you're willing to accept criticism and feedback and new ideas and actually go out and grow? Do you really want to overcome that or do you want to accept that and say, okay, this is all right. I don't know what I'm doing, but I know this. I'm going to figure out how to make it work. You know, when I first started in business, for the first 5.5 years, it was just me and Chris and some of our friends. Then in the sixth year, we had an opportunity to take over a failing business, and we went from one store to six stores in 30 days. All right. I didn't know how to manage anybody. I didn't know how to run the systems of a company. I didn't know how to do anything but run a single store by myself as basically an employee. All right. But guess what? I said, I don't know. I'll figure it out, though. And here we are. So this is the norm of being an entrepreneur. You are going to feel like you don't know what you're doing. And that feeling never goes away if you continue to grow, because where I'm at now in business, I've never been before. So how can I know how to operate at this level when I've never been at this level before? Do I know how to operate at all the levels that I've already been to? Absolutely. And this is the value of finding an actual coach that has built real shit, not one of these internet guys who just talks bullshit. Okay. Because the reality is that those guys can't know how to run a business if they never actually built one. It's impossible. I don't even know how to run the business that I'm running. That's real shit.
At this size.
I don't know because I'm trying to figure it out. Now I think I know because I have this long multi-decade experience that has taught me a lot of lessons along the way. And those lessons can be applicable moving forward, but they have to be adjusted or tweaked or thought about differently. The idea of entrepreneurs ever getting to a point where they feel like they know what they're doing is not real if they continue to grow. Now, if you've been operating at the same level for the last 10 years, you probably know how to operate at that level, but that's all you're ever going to be. And for some people, that's okay. They want to get to a certain level and they stay there, and that's fine. Those people know how to stay right at that level, but they don't know how to go past that. And the problem that a lot of entrepreneurs face is that they think they can move past those points, or that they're skilled enough to move past those points because they've come down the path to this point, you know, on their own. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we have to come to terms as entrepreneurs that we never really know. We never have really become masters of it unless we look on the smaller versions of our previous existence. So there's that. I think what you need to do is you need to accept the reality of the path that you chose, which is it's going to be filled with uncertainty. It's going to be filled with lessons that you experience that cost you time, energy, and money over and over and over again. And you have to be dedicated to learning those lessons as they come and welcoming them at the time. You know, it's a lot easier to face hardship in business or in life when you see the lesson right away, as opposed to having to go through this like mourning process. Oh my God, we made this decision. It cost us so much money. It really screwed us up. It did this, this, and this. And then taking years to come up with the reality of it, which is, well, it taught me a lesson. So the if you can close that gap as small as possible from when the mistake happens or when the lesson occurs to you accepting it as a lesson, the journey becomes far less painful, because when bad shit happens, you're like, okay, well, I learned this and this. And then you associate the value of what that lesson cost to those lessons, and you think about it like that. And then you think about where you're going to be 10 years from now and what that lesson would have cost. It's a lot easier to accept what just happened. So there's a lot of things at play here. And for being a new entrepreneur, it sounds like you got a pretty good grasp on what you're doing. I think you need to remain humble. I think you need to accept the fact that you're not going to know what the fuck you're doing. And if you continue to push, you're still not going to know what you're doing. The best you can do is make an educated guess and be around people who have been down the path that you have chosen to go down, because it's way easier to learn how to get to China by someone who's actually made the journey to China than it is to someone who's only made it, you know, a quarter way or a halfway, right? So, or even not even started, which is the internet right now,
right?
You know?
Right.
So that's my take on it, man.
I love it. Is that a common thing, right? Like, I mean, we talk, I know, I feel like most people, when they think about, you know, taking over companies, it's like, you know, a new family generation, second generation family owned businesses. But when, like, is that a common thing when businesses go out that somebody else comes in and grabs them, or selling your, you know what I'm saying? Like, I guess.
Well, right now we're facing a sort of a interesting economy when it comes to small business, because there's tons of boomer generation people who have owned family-owned businesses for 20, 30, 40 years who are now retiring, and they don't have kids that want to take over the business, and they don't have a succession plan in place, and they don't really know what to do with their business. So there actually is a massive opportunity right now to buy smaller businesses that have been going, that have an established reputation similar to what they're describing here, that can then be scaled out from that point, which is a hell of a lot easier than starting it from zero and trying to make a brand. So if you can get into one of these smaller businesses with a known brand from day one, and you can actually see that brand and think about scaling, there's massive opportunity there. Yeah. The opportunity that's never existed before. So that's one angle that a lot of people are taking. You know, we hear about this online. There's certain people that, you know, focus their entire energy on purchasing small businesses. But dude, just purchasing the business isn't enough. You have to become an operator of the business, and you have to become someone who can scale the brand, and you have to become someone with vision who says, okay, this is a nice start, but here's what it could be. And then you take that and you build it out. And when you bring up second generation businesses, you know, the reason those businesses fail, it very simply is the people who take them over didn't learn all the lessons that were learned to get them to that point. So you're taking someone who doesn't know and have that experience, and you're putting them in as an operator. And not only that, they don't value the work that was put in to build that. So not only do they have the lessons, they don't have the discipline to value it. And for that reason, they're usually run pretty carelessly and they end up failing.
Yeah, the stakes are higher.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I love it.
So, I mean, there's a lot to that, dude. But I think, you know, this person's off to a great start. It's okay to not know. There's more resources now than ever to know. You just have to be discerning about where you take your information. I would never listen to someone ever on the internet who hasn't done what it is you're trying to do legitimately. There's a lot of people that pretend. There's a lot of people that talk good game. But you need to dig in. You need to say, okay, what has this person actually done? What have they built? Where is their business? Do they sell products? Can I order their products? How are their products delivered? Do people care? What are their employees like? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How long have they been doing it? How many customers have they served? How much experience do they really have? Or are they just saying this shit, hoping that you'll pay them $30,000 to fucking coach them? You see what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just, there's so much bullshit on the internet. We got to do, we got to have discernment and think about, you know, where we're getting our information.
I love it. I love it, guys. Andy, question number three. Hey, Andy, how do you maintain in business the things that you do very well while striving to create new ideas and new ways of doing things? I was brought up my entire life being taught that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Business is doing well. We are growing. Revenue's great. But I struggle with the innovation side of things, and I see my competitors trying different things. And we'll just appreciate some guidance here.
Yeah, look, dude, I try to view the scope of business as if we're always losing, okay? Even when we're winning, I try to, like, convince myself, all right, where's the holes? Where are we losing? Where could it be better? Where does our competition beat us? Where are they better than us? And I am constantly dissecting. Any good operator is constantly dissecting their business model to say, how can I remain competitive and even innovate my business in these areas where I'm weak now? So like a amateur business operator, they'll start doing good and they'll take their foot off the gas, right? They're like, oh, we figured it out. We're making money. I could buy an Escalade. I could buy a Porsche. I could buy a bigger house, right? I can buy a lake house. I could do all this shit. And they start doing that shit and their foot comes off that throttle. And while their foot comes off that throttle, all the people they're competing with, they still have their foot down. All right. So this is how most businesses get passed by and lose. The leadership and the ownership gets complacent and they stop getting aggressive about making improvements to the company. So even when you're winning, it's important that you break down the details of every single area of your business over and over and over and over again to consistently search for where those weak points are. And when you're winning, it's a lot easier to fix those weak points and actually innovate them into something more special that even nobody's doing than it is to try to throw a Band-Aid on something when, you know, everything's going bad. Mm-hmm. So I just look at it like that, dude. I look at a business, any business that I run or operate or consult for or contribute to or invest in, I look at them like they're losing. I say, where are they getting beat? And yes, this creates a scenario where you never feel like you're winning, but isn't that okay if you actually do continue to win? You see what I'm saying? So I come at it from that point. I hate to lose. I want to be the best. I try to examine my game, whether it be my personal game, whether it be business game, even when I'm winning. You know, like Michael Jordan didn't go out and, you know, have these amazing games and then go home and sit there and think like, fuck, I'm the best. No, dude, he goes back, you know, when he scores whatever he scored, 70 points or 60 points, right? And he goes home and he says, okay, what about these shots I missed? Here's why I missed them. Here's what I did. Yeah. Here's what I need to do different. And he starts improving his game even when the rest of the world looks at it and says, holy shit, dude, look how great he is. And this is how people not only stay great, but they get better and better and better and become iconic and legendary. So that's the idea and perspective that I think you should have about your business. I think it's important to acknowledge wins. I think it's important to say, hey, we're doing this well, it's working. But I think it's important not to read the headlines when you're doing really well, and also not to read the headlines when people fucking hate you. Because here's the thing. When you start to do well, people are going to hate you. That's human nature. So you can't believe the negative or the positive. You have to look at it objectively and say, this is reality. Yes, we're winning. Yes, we're doing well. Yes, things are going well. But this area need to get way better. And we need to fix this and this and this while things are going well, and not wait to try to fix everything once the bottom falls out of shit.
That's what most people do.
Well, yeah, they listen. That falls into the concept that we talk about all the time called selective urgency, right? Nobody's urgent until they have to be urgent. And being selectively urgent, which means I'm only urgent when the situation requires urgency, is a sure way to create a bunch of situations that require urgency. Because the truth of the matter is, if you were urgent every day about getting everything done, and by the way, as an operator of a business, you don't have the luxury of freedom and peace and harmony and all this bullshit these people spew on the internet. They don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Maybe that's okay for them, but you chose a different path. And that path that you chose is highly competitive. And if you take your foot off the gas and you think that like you're going to be able to, you know, half-ass your way through, bro, you're going to get smashed. It's too competitive. So you have to continue to break down everything that you're doing, especially when you're winning, and be honest about where you need to improve and then make those changes.
Yeah. So it's not about fixing what's not broken. It's about fixing what's fucking.
It's about fixing shit that isn't even broke yet.
Right. Okay.
Okay. That's what it is. Yeah. You know, the idea of, you know, it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's true in some areas of life, but not really, because we're living in a sliding scale. The world is constantly progressing. In your relationships, people are changing. They're becoming different. They're thinking about things. They're consuming information. They're listening to music. They're reading books, which is forming a different human right in front of your eyes. So if you say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it in your friendships or in your relationships, you're going to lose because the variables are changing. In business, it's the same. The market is always changing. People are always progressing. The competitive marketplace is always jockeying for new position. There's always elements and variables that are changing. So if you say, if it ain't broken, it's working right now, don't fix it, that's a guaranteed way to end up with a loss. So the idea is fix it before you break it. That's how you should be looking at it. This is where we're vulnerable. This is where we could be better. This is where we could innovate. Even when you're winning. And this is how you continue to win.
I love it. I love it. Well, guys, Andy, that was 3.
Yep. Go pay the fee.
Yeah. Went from sleeping on the floor. Now my jewelry box froze. Fuck a bowl. Fuck a stove. Counted millions in a cold.